Last week's Easter service was a joy. We watched the flowering of the cross. We sang pedal to the metal hymns and anthems. The church was full. The after-service treats were very delicious. The atmosphere was festive. There were lots of old friends in church. Young students home for the spring break were here. Last week's Easter service was a joy. At the same time, to be perfectly honest, something about last week's service unsettled me. It was, I think, that Easter came so soon after Good Friday. And on Sunday morning, I wasn't quite able to shake off the very ambivalent feelings I had about Good Friday. In fact, if I think about it, I realize that for me, as long as I've been a minister, Easter's joy has never been quite enough to erase the horror of the cross. The cross is ugly. We don't often stop for very long to think about how ugly. After all, we wear the cross as golden jewelry. And so it's hard to feel bad about crosses in general. We see the cross every week on the wall above me, and we get used to it so that we don't really see it at all anymore. We've become so familiar with the cross that we hardly stop to think about it, especially since Easter comes so soon after Good Friday to divert our attention to more pleasant thoughts. But you know, crosses and crucifixions are really very ugly, even though they're at the very center of the Bible. Well, just for example, to try to get a sense of it, there's a crucifixion story told by Chusaku Endo in his stunning novel, Silence. This book describes how Japanese Christians were persecuted 500 years ago after Christianity was banned in Japan. And it happened like this. The authorities set two crosses at the ocean's edge. They tied two Christians to these crosses. When the tide came in, their bodies were immersed in the cold seawater up to their chins. This was done so that they would not die at once, but only after two or three days of severe and utter physical and mental exhaustion. So on the first day, these two Christians sang hymns. On the second day, only the sound of their moaning could be heard above the wind and the waves. And on the third day, they died. A European missionary, a Jesuit priest, hiding in the village where these two Christians were from, really comes to question his faith, actually, in the novel. And he writes in his journal, "I had long read about martyrdom in the lives of the saints, how the souls of martyrs had gone home to heaven, how they had been filled with glory in paradise, how the angels had blown trumpets when they arrived, but the martyrdom of these Japanese Christians that I now describe to you was no such glorious thing. What a miserable and painful business it was, the martyrdom of these peasants enacted before my very eyes. How wretched it was, miserable like the huts they lived in, like the rags with which they were clothed." The crucifixion of Jesus was, if possible, more wretched. The hammer ringing through Jerusalem's streets, the rusty iron nails, the crown of thorns, the way Jesus was abandoned by all his male friends, at least, by all who loved him. even God, according to the story. It's interesting to me that in the Bible, in the Gospels, the exact opposite thing happens compared to what we do on Easter. The Gospels are actually very long passion stories, chapters and chapters leading up to the cross. And then there's a brief resurrection story tacked on to the end. The Gospels spend all sorts of chapters recounting the events that lead up to Jesus' crucifixion. The painful march to Jerusalem, the mounting hatred of the leaders of the people, the Last Supper, the Garden of Gethsemane, the arrest, the trial, the torture, and finally the crucifixion itself. I suppose that we have 8 weeks of Lent so that we can focus on all that stuff. But let's be honest, Lent is also spring break, and the kids have sporting events, and the weather's improving, and we like to be outside, and work is really busy, and no one, including me, really wants to go into it week after week after week. The last Sunday of Lent, Palm Sunday, is actually a celebration, mostly with hosannas and children's dancing in the aisles. And then it's Holy Week. Very briefly, it's Good Friday. Many of us are not even able to come to church on that day. And suddenly, blink, it's Easter. And somehow, even though the Gospels focus on the pain and the passion, at church we've magically passed by the suffering and the horror of the cross in no time at all. We hardly think about it. Our practice of Easter is a sort of denial. What do we make of the Bible's preoccupation, not with resurrection, but with Jesus' suffering? Well, it helps in part, I think, to remember the New Testament context. In those times when the Bible was written and for centuries after, as in the novel Silence, Christians just knew suffering in their bones in a way that, thank God, we do not. The first followers of Jesus were persecuted. They were thrown out of the synagogues that they had attended their whole lives. They were mocked in the streets. They were disowned by their families. Many were eventually thrown into jail, stoned. They lost their jobs. They were charged with being atheists for not believing in all the gods of the Roman pantheon. The authorities, the Roman authorities, looked at Christians as subversives because they believed that Jesus was Lord instead of Caesar. And this was in an era before the separation of church and state. So ultimately, many Christians did pay for their beliefs with their lives. So in a way that eludes us because the times have changed, early Christians identified strongly with Jesus' passion. Jesus' suffering was their suffering, their future, their daily reality. And retelling the stories of Jesus' suffering somehow brought Jesus closer to them, made it believable that Jesus empathized with their plight, cared for them. The stories of Jesus' suffering suggested that the early Christians, they did not suffer alone, that God was with them in it. Mostly this daily familiarity with suffering is really different for those of us who live in 21st century Canada. I mean, for starters, we have freedom of religion. None of us are going to be thrown in jail for being Christians. We've worked out what the separation of church and state means, thanks God. We want a multi-faith, multicultural society, and we've been hearing in the press recently that diversity actually makes for a much stronger Canada. We have, many of us, wealth, leisure, pastimes that make the idea of suffering seem odd. And in fact, when we do suffer, perhaps because of a cancer diagnosis, or broken family relationships, or unexpected financial setbacks, or depression, or because we've taken the high road at some business meeting that was not popular, when we do suffer, we often actually actually, in public, play the denial game. Not wanting others to know, sometimes not even being honest with ourselves about the pain we feel. We've not only banished Good Friday from our experience, but we disguise our suffering whenever we feel it because there is this cultural meme. There's this kind of unspoken sense in our world today that those who suffer, they're kind of broken, they're a burden, they're embarrassing, they're a bother. And so we hide it. But suffering, for what we believe or on account of the tragedies that befall us, suffering is not something that we ought to deny or ignore or wink at in church. The reality of suffering, the consequences of living a moral and good life in a world where everyone else is cutting corners, the agony of pain, all such suffering is still very much with us, even when we're at our best, denying it. It's with us. Believe me, I know. I am your pastor. I have been in your living rooms. I have been in your hospital rooms. I've read your letters. I have seen your tears. We see the reality of suffering in the good people we serve at our out of the cold supper. We see the reality of suffering when we pass by beggars who meet us at the subway. We worship across the street from Sunnybrook Hospital and its palliative care and cancer wards. We see the reality of suffering in the suspicion with which all Muslims are usually treated, in the racism that First Nations and Black people still experience daily. We read about the reality of suffering or hear about it on television too. As unbelievable as it seems, Christians have in this past year been crucified and beheaded by ISIS. Scores of refugees have died in the Mediterranean Ocean. People of all faiths have to watch their step in China or Saudi Arabia or North Korea and many other countries beside, otherwise they'll end up in jail, or worse. And I haven't even touched on poverty, war, genocide, all in our recent memory. And the Bible story of Jesus' politically and religiously motivated arrest, and the Bible story about the price Jesus paid for living that deeply moral life is meant in part to give us a reality check, to shout out to us that there is a cost, historically sometimes a terrible cost, for all of us. There may well be nothing we have to do when it comes to making nice with God. As I suggested last week, but there is no escaping the reality that most of us do or will suffer. And sure, after the long and sorry story of Jesus' suffering, we get the Easter story. There is new life. You know, that tiny persecuted Christian community where everybody was being thrown in jail, that tiny little community grew like wildfire. Because that new life meant that in their house churches, at least, there were no more slaves and no more women who were second-class citizens and no more foreigners who were treated as if they were pagan. That new life in the early church meant community sharing and sharing everything in common even and forgiving each other rather than getting even. That new life meant the high moral ground of the Sermon on the Mount and the Lord's Prayer was in their back pockets and they had it and could live by it. Historically, that new life has helped shape the very best features of our modern society. And finally, it gives us permission to dream about what follows after this life. But in the meantime, suffering has not been eradicated. As Jesus died, so will we all. As he was misunderstood, so will sometimes we be mocked for our choices. As he wept in Gethsemane, so will we all weep many times, even if only in the privacy of our home. It takes great courage and wisdom to face up to this and not run from it through denial. But for those who face suffering and share it, what we strive for in this church is to be a group of people among whom there are those who will share the load, who will offer a listening ear, who will embrace us when we are at our weakest and in spite of our trials, who will generously reach out to alleviate the suffering of others, near and far, because we are followers of Jesus. We know this is what we do, what he would have us do. So sure, last Sunday was Easter, and it's the best thing. I'm glad. It was a happy, happy service. I have that new life too, you have it. Last week, Easter Sunday came. But let's not forget, the first, it was Friday. The Friday for which Easter is the cure.